Now, when Woman's Hour celebrated its 50th anniversary in 1996, we asked you to vote for your favourite song of all time. Sisters Are Doing It For Themselves by Annie Lennox was way out in front. In the 80s, with the Eurythmics, Annie perfected her androgynous style and had massive hits with songs like Sweet Dreams and Who's That Girl. In the 90s, she went solo and won a Brit Award for her album Diva. Her latest album received a lot of attention for the starkness of its cover. It shows Annie looking pale and drawn. It's called Bare, and in the notes she describes herself as a mature woman facing up to the failed expectations of life. Bitter Pill is one of the tracks. Well, Annie Lennox is known for guarding her privacy, and her feelings about the breakdown of her marriages have never been made public. So why, I asked her, has she chosen to expose herself in this way now?
People will automatically say this is my, you know, post-divorce album, which it is. Of course, that's true in my private life. That's something that happened to me and my family. But then again, it's also a fiction because I expose my emotional world to a certain degree. But my world privately is full of minutiae and details that I don't discuss. But as an artist, as a musician, I've always exposed my emotional world, and that is what great music is about. It's almost like there's a kind of universal truth that I think affects everyone, and that is the beauty of performance or music making or poetry or art. It connects us as human beings. It's as if the person who's writing the music and performing it is articulating something for me. So in my expression of what I have to say about my own inner world, I hope that other people will identify with it, you know.
I know a friend of yours has said that you see the glass half empty rather than half full. What did the friend mean by that?
Well, life is tricky for everyone. We don't ask to be born, and we didn't ask for the circumstances that we arrive in either. We don't know what they're going to be. And I think that none of us can avoid difficulties, whether it could be something like loss or death or illness, or just that you've been bullied at school, you know. It could be anything. And depending on how you perceive it will very much depend on the quality of your existence. So I have been historically fairly pessimistic, you know, and that's obviously, it's just a classic line. I mean, the way one sees it. And I think it's a very powerful little piece of wisdom, actually, because if one can manage the great art of seeing the glasses half full, then you can perhaps transform what might seem as a very difficult moment into something that perhaps holds some promise. So I've been trying to see the glass as half full.
There is a song on the album called A Thousand Beautiful Things, which almost seems to be you reminding yourself that the glass can be half full.
Yes. That particular song is about gratitude, essentially. And the problem is that sometimes life can overwhelm you and make you feel as if nothing's really worthwhile because the effort is so enormous. But still, you know, the little trick perhaps is just to see in the smaller things, the little details, that therein the beauty lies.
Your image has always been striking, but it's particularly striking, the image that you put out for this album. It's raw, it's haggard even. Why did you choose that image?
Because I feel that I'm surrounded by youth and beauty, and as a woman who's approaching 50, I don't want to compete with that. That was one of the reasons why, because I thought I could use a very glamorized image quite easily, but I felt that the content of my work had depth and it wasn't about that. And I wanted to create a presentation of myself that reflected the qualities of the emotions that's contained within the album. I just experiment. I just have ideas about the way I'd like to present myself. And it's really almost more, it's more like performance art than it would be conventional album cover. And I like to push the boundaries also, because there seems to be a feeling among women of my own age that we are somewhat negated by the time we reach our 40s. It's as if youth rules, and I don't think youth necessarily ought to rule. I think that women of my age, I see women as the keepers, the ones who maintain, the ones who consistently keep the fires burning, keep everything going, and yet still are unspoken for, unsounded, you know, unless they happen to be young and beautiful.
And yet, I mean, a lot of people looking at that picture said, oh, she must be ill, she's too thin, she looks ill, what are her daughters going to think about it? Yeah, they
did. I didn't know that.
You didn't read the tabloid press.
No. Well, there was a tabloid, couple of tabloid articles about the way I looked, but they are so ridiculous that they're not even worth discussing for me, because I have to be so fit to, I mean, when I go on stage, I'm working for almost 2 hours solidly, singing and moving and travelling from city to city. So I just, you know, if there's anything written in the tabloids about me, I really brush it off, because I know what's true and there's no point in responding to it, because it's only going to feed the fire. They're, you know, that's basically nowadays what people want. You know, they want to find a thread of a rumour. It's kind of boring, really.
One of the things that we've never really found out is what happened with the Eurythmics. I mean, you briefly reformed in 1999, but never officially announced a split. It split, came back together. What did happen?
Well, there was no need to officially announce a split. It didn't really warrant anything like that. We were just a group that made music, a duo that made music, and neither of us felt it was necessary to announce anything, because we actually didn't really know what we were going to do. We knew that we wanted to do things separately, but it wasn't something that warranted a great big announcement. We just followed our own desires, you know, and I knew that I wanted to have a family, or my own sort of life separate from Eurythmics, a quieter life in a way, perhaps, because, you know, with Eurythmics, we'd made an album every year, we'd tour with those albums, and really through most of the 80s I just never stopped working, and I chose to do that, there was no problem with that, but at a certain point it started to feel very repetitious, and I've never been one to like to go through the motions of things. It has to be meaningful.
And now touring, I think you've been performing some of the Eurythmics classics. What's it like performing those without Dave?
I don't think about whether Dave's there or not particularly. They're great songs, and I love performing them. And I perform them possibly slightly differently than the versions that we did before. But I don't really think about them, because they're part of my heritage, you know, part of my history.
I was talking to Annie Lennox.